You're listening to SBS News.
The year 2000 and Australia was well into the new millennium. As Sydney hosted the Olympics, it was the moment Australia shone on the world stage. But just 1 year on, the world would change forever following the September 11 terrorist attacks. Cabinet historian Dr. Chris Wallace says the country was on the cusp of a major change.
There were so many things in the year 2000 which are hinted at or beginning and developing, and then in the next year, in 2001, just explode, largely fueled by the September 11 al-Qaeda attacks in the US. And so year 2000, there's still an air of normality that we really haven't had since.
While Australia was riding on a high from the success of the Sydney Olympics, the re-elected Howard government was now in their second term. They claimed a mandate to implement what was once seen as political poison, the Goods and Services Tax, or the GST. It began on the 1st of July. Then Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson says the hard work had already been done. He served from 1999 to 2005.
It was very difficult. But by the time we got to its actual implementation, I think we went to bed with a sort of resigned sense of, we've done everything we can, and this will probably be all right.
As the reality of global warming continued to dawn, it led to the genesis of an emissions trading scheme, says Dr. Chris Wallace.
These papers show the origin moment of that initiative and shows just how possible it could have been. There was certainly no sense that climate science wasn't broadly accepted. It wasn't even a matter for debate in Cabinet.
Though an official position wouldn't come until years later, John Howard eventually took an emissions trading scheme to the 2007 election. But two decades since its conception, climate change policy has polarised national politics. John Anderson says he's dismayed to see where Australia is 20 years on.
It's very disheartening because it's distracting us and dividing us when, frankly, we face enormous problems internationally and even internally that really require our undivided attention.
Australia's immigration policy was also about to shift. In January, an unauthorised boat arrival from Indonesia carrying 52 asylum seekers was intercepted en route to Australia. There were deliberations within government on how to handle what appeared to be an increase in numbers of people choosing this route to Australia. John Anderson says the government was coming to terms with the seriousness of the issue.
There was a sense that it could get very bad indeed, and that major political unrest in other parts of the world could have resulted in a situation where we simply couldn't have managed, and that we needed to clearly establish control of our borders. It was also seen as a political imperative. There was a lot of pressure coming out of Western Australia at that time to do something.
That pressure continued to build, and matters came to a head the following year with the so-called Children Overboard affair and the rescue of the Norwegian cargo ship Tampa of more than 430 asylum seekers from a sinking Indonesian fishing boat in international waters. They were seeking safe haven in Australia, but Prime Minister John Howard refused to let the ship enter Australian waters. The controversial Pacific solution of offshore detention was the result. Dr. Chris Wallace says it was a critical moment.
2000 is the year before Tampa happened, and of course before the year when September 11 really supercharged these kind of issues. But the arrival of that boat and the long cabinet paper Philip Ruddock as immigration minister brought forward shows the government grappling with illegal boat arrivals in significant numbers for the first time. The papers show the government walking down a hard crackdown policy that some of the departmental policy comments in the papers show were of concern.
The government was also dealing with domestic implications of global conflicts. After taking in almost 4,000 evacuees from Kosovo in 1999, a year later, Cabinet devised a strategy to return about 400 of them. It noted community interest in the matter and the potential for negative publicity. John Anderson has defended the Howard government's treatment of refugees.
By and large, in terms of the international refugee problem and trying to ensure the most needy people and giving them access to this country, far more generous than most other countries around the world. That is too often overlooked. And one of the things that polarises the debate in this country is that people present one side of the argument without acknowledging the other side of the argument. Australians have not been mean-spirited. We have been very strong on resettling people in desperate plight from very troubled parts of the world.
Closer to home, some conflicts were starting to settle as East Timor was in the process of rebuilding. Australia played a major role while also trying to mend relations with East Timor's former colonial master, Indonesia. In March 2000, Cabinet also discussed a hope to normalise relations with North Korea, though that wouldn't eventuate. Back home and with an ageing population and a low fertility rate, Cabinet also agreed to increase the skilled migration intake. Director General at the National Archives of Australia, David Fricker, says it was a glimpse into yet another chapter in Australia's multicultural history offered by the Cabinet papers.
There was just so much optimism and so much pride that was just flourishing in Australia around that time. And I think, you know, when we look at these documents and we just relive those moments, we reobserve Australia as it was back in 2000. I think it does give us confidence and optimism about the future.
2000's Cabinet papers show a nation and a world few could imagine would look as different as it does 20 years on. Pablo Viñales, SBS News.